Rod Decker, Gospel Tangents.
Perfect. That's awesome.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In the 1930s and 40s, the United States and Germany were both racing to be the first to get an atomic bomb. In southern Nevada, the United States tested above-ground nuclear tests, and much of the radiation and fallout came by wind to southern Utah. In our next conversation with Rod Decker, we'll talk about how these above-ground nuclear tests cause Utahns to become distrustful of the federal government. We'll talk about Utahns' both love and hate of the defense industry in our next conversation and how it affected Utah politics. Check out our conversation.
So one of the other interesting things that I found about your book was, so kind of 1973 seems like a very, what would we call that, a kind of a cusp or a turning point there. Maybe an inflection point. But even after 1973, Utah continued to elect Democratic governors.
Yes, they did. Well, okay. They were sort of in the habit. Cal Rampton got elected in 1964, and that was the year that Barry Goldwater was the Republican nominee. And Lyndon Baines Johnson carried more than 60% of the vote, and he carried Utah, and Cal Rampton became governor. Cal Rampton was running, he served 12 years. So Scott Matheson was running then, and he was sort of, that we were sort of used to Democratic governors. It took a while to trickle down. It started with the president, but we had Scott Matheson for governor. We've had five or six congressmen. We even had Frank Moss. Now let me think. No, he'd already gone. We didn't have senators back then. 76, Orrin Hatch won the first time. But it took a while for Republicanism to get all the way through, but eventually it did.
Okay, yeah, because Governor Matheson, do you remember when he left office?
He left in 84.
84. So
well, I mean, 85 was the January of 85 is when he actually left, but 84 was the election where Bangor was elected.
Okay, because I remember Governor Leavitt, and I always remember thinking, wow, he's a good man, even though he's a Democrat.
Governor Matheson.
Governor Matheson.
Yeah.
So 73 was kind of a turning point for national politics, but even locally, we were still
local. Okay. It took Latter-day Saints became Republicans. It took them a while to get thoroughly Republican. Republican from top to bottom. I mean, they had Democratic governors and legislators. They were a lot of them were Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Took a while, but eventually they became thoroughly Republican. And Utah became pretty thoroughly Republican. Salt Lake City holds out.
Well, and one of the things I remember also about your book was you said that even with the Democratic governors, a lot of times they were very strongly anti-federal government, especially even including Governor Matheson.
Utah has a... one of the things that happened... this is a different topic. It's Utah politics, but this isn't about morals, sex, and families. This is different. And it isn't so much religion either. Okay. Utah used to be a defense state. Utah was hit by the Great Depression harder than most other states. What pulled them out was World War II. After World War II, Utah had a big defense sector. Utah, for a number of years in the early 1960s, Utah had the largest defense sector of any state in proportion to its economy. I mean, we were nothing compared to California, but California was a bigger deal. We had our defense sector provided a bigger percentage of jobs. We had Hill Air Force Base, we had other military installations, and we had a big aero defense industry. We had Litton, we had Marcotte, we had Hercules, we had a lot of them.
Morton Thiokol.
Yes, a lot of them. And they were they paid a lot of money, manufacturing jobs, and they carried the economy for a number of years in the 60s. We were pro defense. When they said we want to put nerve gas at Tooele, we said yes, sir. When they said we want to put germ warfare at Dugway, we said that's a good place for it. And we did that from World War II till Scott Matheson.
The main reason is because we were recovering from the Depression and we needed the jobs. Is that right?
That was the start in World War II. But then even after our economy, even we had good years. I mean, we're talking about the Depression was the 30s, and this were in the 60s. And World War II was very good years for Utah economically, and we had some good years afterwards. Our economy grew, things were pretty good. So, but part of the reason, maybe the chief reason they were pretty good, was the defense sector or the federal government. We had mining was a big thing then too, and people's ideas changed in World War II. You had a good job, that was good, but defense was a good thing to do. We believed in America. We wanted to win the war. By Vietnam, why we didn't believe so much in America, and we didn't particularly care whether our guys won the war, or maybe. Okay, we weren't so patriotic. We weren't so pro-defense, and it wasn't just us. It was the whole country. Okay, so then there were a series of controversies that are still going on, though less than they used to, over destroying nerve gas at Tooele, over a lab to test biological weapons at Dugway. The big one, the start of them, was the downwinder issue, where the United States tested atomic bombs in Nevada. The fallout drifted over southern Utah, and it was said thousands died. If you look at the scientific papers, probably fewer. What they can show is maybe 50 or 60. Not good, but
not thousands.
Not
either.
Thousands either. Mm-hmm. Maybe only 10. Maybe only 10 or 11. I mean,
really?
You can't tell who died. Guy gets cancer and he dies. You don't know. You don't know.
Because of smoking?
What you do is they do two things. They do dosimetry. They calculate how much radiation he might have been exposed to, and they do they calculate how much epidemiology it's called. They calculate how much cancer there was against how much cancer they think there ought to have been, and. We end up with maybe 10, maybe 50. Now, it has to, the level of proof has to be high. It has to be 90 or 95% statistically that it wasn't just bad luck. So, but that's the way epidemiology works. Right. Those aren't special rules to beat up on southern Utahns. That's the way it works, and by that, 10 to maybe 50 or 60 died, mostly little children, a lot of childhood leukemia.
Now, do you know Dr. Joseph Lyon by chance?
Yes.
He was one of my professors. I actually have a degree in statistics. He talked a lot about this.
He was probably the scientist who did the most.
Yeah, it seems
the Utah
like
scientist anymore.
He said that most of these cancers were actually thyroid cancers.
There are two what they call sentinel cancers, and the thyroid cancers and childhood leukemia, and I think I read his paper and I read there were some thyroid cancers and some thyroiditis that is non-fatal that they think was caused by fallout.
Right.
And there were some childhood leukemias. Now they looked at everything else, and they can't prove in any way that they weren't caused by radiation. But they can't show that they were.
Right.
So fallout came, caused some cancers. Maybe it caused other cancers that you can't measure because they're too few, but that's the showings of science. And there's all sorts of folklore. Fallout fell like snow, and kids scraped their initials on the hoods of trucks, and the paint all got burned off except where they scraped their initials. There's no contemporary record of any of that stuff. People got radiation sickness. I think there's no contemporary records of that.
So it seems like a lot of these stories are a little bit overblown.
Yeah. Yes, there was cancer. Yes, it was a very bad thing. No, it wasn't as bad as the big stories tell.
Okay.
But it was a big deal in Utah. People were really upset. And a lot of people still believe that there were hundreds or maybe thousands who died. And you talk to people from southern Utah, they'll tell you they saw pink clouds. I don't think they saw pink clouds. or maybe they saw after they saw Santa Claus, maybe. I don't know. But there aren't contemporary records of pink clouds or green clouds. Remember when the seagulls came and ate the crickets?
Yes.
They don't talk about that so much because somebody went back and looked at all the journals and nobody at the time said the seagulls ate the crickets. That started 10 years later. People said the seagulls saved us. This is like the seagulls and the crickets, I think.
Hmm.
That was the big one. That didn't make Utah different. Everywhere, people complained about defense projects. Everywhere, people got angry about nerve gas and biological warfare and so forth. But Utah had, abortion and pornography and so forth, where you had one after another, Utah had one defense fight.
And so these defense fights also started in the 60s, is that true?
The downwinder started in the 60s. Now let me think. Then there was the sheep kill. Was it 68? Rampton was governor. It was some nerve gas got away from Dugway and killed about 5,000 sheep, and the government admitted they did it. They paid damages. And Governor Rampton never talked about it after that. He said
these were airplane flights over some sheep ranches and
it was over Dugway Proving Ground. Okay. They used to test nerve gas in the open, and they had a bleachers. You'd sit in the bleachers with a gas mask and watch the plane do nerve gas. You were hopefully far enough away, but you had a gas mask in case. So. I never did it, but that's what I read. Okay, so on this test, the plane does a practice run where it puts out a fake nerve gas. It isn't really a gas; it's an aerosol. It's droplets. Puts out a fake. Does a second run putting out a fake. Does a third run putting out the real stuff, and it was a fighter plane attached to a nozzle. With a spray rig on it, with a nozzle, and it flies 150 feet off the ground, flies fast so that the stuff doesn't get in where the pilot is, and then it climbs and goes away. But the nozzle failed to close, so it kept dribbling nerve agent as it climbed. A storm came along and blew it halfway to the Wasatch Front, landed on the sheep and killed the sheep. And Governor Rampton said, "Don't panic. This is we're okay." And then he quit talking about it after the Army said, "Yeah, we're sorry we did it, and we'll pay damages." But Matheson changed the office of governor over it. He fought over bringing nerve gas weapons to Tooele. He fought over. The repercussions of the sheep kill. He fought over the He fought over nuclear waste. He fought over the downwinders, and he did a lot of it, one after another, and he won a lot of popularity with it. He was a Democrat, but he didn't come into office looking to fight the federal government, but he sort of found his stride fighting the federal government. He did that, and he became enormously popular. Utah's had popular governors, but Matheson was popular, and part of the reason he was popular, MX was his biggest fight. They were going to put MX out in the
MX missile.
Yes, out in the West Desert, and he fought that and helped to stop it. Ronald Reagan actually stopped it.
But, well, and I know President Kimball had a big role with that as well.
The LDS Church, the Church of Latter-day Saints, came out formally against putting MX out there, and I'm sure that had some effect. But the main thing was, Ronald Reagan didn't like the idea of putting it out there, and he didn't like it. It was complicated. It had to do with arms control and so forth. He didn't like putting it out there when he was a candidate. He moved it after he was president. It was a Jimmy Carter plan. But Matheson fought that. He fought a lot of federal things. Bangor fought federal things. Levitt fought especially high-level nuclear waste on the Goshute Reservation. But it was one after another again, and it exacerbated Utah's anti-federal government feeling.
Well, and that seems to have been a very, at least in my lifetime, Utah politicians are really against federal intervention in a lot of things, which relates even to things like Obamacare and things like that as well. So this tradition has been, I guess, bipartisan until between the 60s and 70s and even 80s, and then it became
It was not so bipartisan. Rampton was pro-federal government. He was the last governor to speak well of the federal government. He was a political child of the New Deal. He got his start in politics as a staffer for Congressman Will Robinson, who was a Democrat, a New Deal Democrat. And he believed in the federal government. And Matheson, while he fought him on defense, fought him on water, over the Central Utah Project, he was with them on a lot of things. He liked things like public housing. He believed in federal grants. He had no problem with Medicaid. He worked hard to on welfare, which was a huge federal issue at the time, has sort of gone away. But he worked hard to try in tandem with the federal government on that. He had state programs. Democrats were skeptical on defense. Now, and remember, Democrats were the anti-Vietnam War party, and they were sort of anti-military, but they were pro social policy, pro-federal social policy. And Matheson was that way to some extent.
Okay. Well, interesting. So can you talk us a little bit more about this Central Utah Project? It seems like that's been a big, big mess.
It's a water project, a federal water project. And the idea is to take the dam streams over in the Uinta Basin and to take water that would flow down the Colorado to the Pacific, to bring it through a tunnel through the Wasatch Mountains, to bring it over here onto the Wasatch Front, and eventually it'll flow into the Great Salt Lake. It'll irrigate farms or do whatever it does in the meantime. And it's the ideas for it went back into the 20s, and Western states fought over the Colorado River water. And the Central Utah Project was sort of Utah's share. The guy maybe who got it the most was might have been Frank Moss, the senator. He wrote a book called The Water Crisis, and he talked about a project to take water from the Yukon in Canada and Alaska, run it down in the canal, run a canal from the Great Lakes to the Pacific Ocean. They'd meet up and cross. There'd be an 80-foot pipe bringing water into Utah. There'd be a canal that ran across Utah. They'd pump the water up to the top of the Rockies, and it'd flow down to Texas and the Rio Grande, and it'd flow down the Colorado. It would be he was going to replumb the whole continent.
That's quite a project.
Yeah, was his plan, though that never happened. But he did help get the Central Utah project. It was supposed to be done in 72. It still isn't done. It was supposed to cost $100 million. It's now at about $3 billion.
Holy cow!
It was done to irrigate farms. That was what the Bureau of Reclamation did. Well, we don't have any more farms on the Wasatch Front. Hardly. We've got ranch houses, not ranches. Legally, it's complicated so that if you use the water for drinking, the subsidy isn't so great. So it keeps going on and on, and the cost keeps going up and up, and it's not clear that we need the water now that it's done or nearly done.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Rod Decker. In our next conversation, we'll talk about whether the LDS Church wields too much influence in state politics.
The church is somewhat involved in state politics, but it depends on what you mean by involved.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.